Oh boy. Well, it's all right. We still welcome you in here to the 9 o'clock hour on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Yeah, sometimes that happens. You think you got the edited version, and Oren's looking at the computer like, this was supposed to be. That's okay.
The system just failed me.
That's all right.
Horribly.
That's all right. That's what we got the dumb button for, right? 404-726-0929.
I'm not getting in trouble for that one. I tell you that much.
No. 404-726-0929. Oh, that's a way to kick off the 9 o'clock hour. We're going to give you our college football takeaways from the weekend here in just a second. How did you feel about Max Fried pitching a gem today for the Yankees, coming off of a 19-game winning season and showing that he's still a dominant pitcher in the postseason? Oren, as a lifelong Braves fan, did that wrinkle you at all, or are you like, no, is it good for him? It's fine.
Yankees paid him. That's where he is right now. As concerned about him as in New York, I'm that much more. I'm concerned about Freddie in Los Angeles. No, just I'd rather see. You know what? I'd rather see them go and play well than go somewhere and struggle.
Interesting.
Yeah,
because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that are rooting for just that. As a matter of fact,
just go out there and be great, man. Like. Mm-hmm. I want to see that player that I enjoyed watching here still go out and be that player for another team. Like, I don't want it to be where, like, oh, well, we got the best years of him. No, he's a good player. He deserved to go and get a big payday from somebody, some team, and go out there and be great for another team, if that's what it is.
We knew it wasn't going to be here in Atlanta where he got that check. Speaking of which, by the way, this is fun to watch. As somebody who grew up rooting for the Yankees, and it is Yankees Red Sox.
Here we go, Chris.
It's 3-1 Boston in the bottom of the ninth. Aroldis Chapman on the mound for the Red Sox. Yeah, you heard that correctly. Oren, there were so many times that Aroldis Chapman gave up a season-ending home run.
not a game-ending.
A season-ending.
Not a serious clinching.
It was like three times versus the Astros alone over the past six, 7 years that he gave up a season-ending home run. The Yankees are looking to make a late rally in the bottom of the ninth. But I know nobody here cares about that, so we're going to shift to some college football. Just interesting seeing Max Fried take the mound and go six strong, six strikeouts, and hold the Red Sox to one run. Again, 19 wins for Fried on the season. We'll start where we started with Ian Valentino. Oh, does UGA loss sink them? Or can they respond? Do they need to run the table? Is the question that I have coming off of that game is, now do they need to run the table?
If they run the table, they're in.
Oh,
because that means
sure,
you would have beaten Texas, you would have beaten Ole Miss, and you would have beaten Georgia Tech, who looks like they might not have a loss either.
They did their best to.
They almost gave it away, but. You know, there's a team that at the very least will have maybe one loss, maybe two losses when they come here at Mercedes-Benz and play Georgia Thanksgiving
again
week.
The question for me is two good enough? Is two losses good enough to get you in, if you're not the conference champion? I don't know. This new format's kind of thrown everything for a loop, so I'm just not really sure.
Loop, yes, but I think it's still set up. Are designed, even without the 9-game conference schedules right now, I think it's still designed to get the majority of spots filled by SEC and Big Ten teams. If they have four each. Yeah, if the committee has their way, then they want this filled with as many SEC and Big Ten teams as possible.
I still think it'll be four each. Four each, one or two from the ACC, and then the rest. Good luck is what I'll say for that. Arkansas fires Sam Pittman. What's the state of the Razorbacks? Not good is where I'll start.
By the way, after this is all done and they're going to do the payout, like the AD is saying right now that they don't have the finances, so to speak, to compete with the other teams in the SEC in terms of football program, if you will.
Well, whose fault is that?
They got Tyson Chicken money.
Yeah, whose fault? They got Jerry Jones
money.
Whose fault is that? Don't have your program stink. Sorry, guys. Is there, Oren, in your opinion, because I was trying to rack my brain over this, and I couldn't really think of one. Is there a logical, natural fit there? I don't really see one.
As a person being there?
Yeah, the new head coach.
No,
yeah.
I mean, the most logical fit was Sam Pittman.
Yeah, like I don't
see. He was the Arkansas dude.
Right, like I don't see the guy who just, it sticks out to me like a sore thumb.
You got to find a guy who.
You're going to go get goalish?
You got to find somebody who you can entice with the allure of, hey, you know, we're not a top tier SEC program, but we are in the SEC. And there's big-time SEC money here and big-time SEC coverage. And you're in an area that, while Arkansas might not be the most target-rich recruiting environment, you're not far from Texas, you're not far from Louisiana, you're not far from Mississippi.
No, I mean,
so within that area right there, there's still guys you can go and pluck. So,
I mean, I still remember a decade ago when, you know, maybe closer to 15 years ago, Darren McFadden was running around in the backfield and they – we're winning some big games. I mean, listen, it's not that – and it's, you know, it's an SEC school. The guy for me is Alex Golish. That's the guy, University of South Florida head coach. That dude's a dude. And he has, like, that kind of mentality that you need at a school like Arkansas. But we'll see.
The only problem I have with that, and I say made the problem, he's just from outside the region, Brian Harsin. But it's tough when you get a guy who – maybe doesn't have the familiarity.
He's also got baggage.
He got baggage too, but it's Golish being a Florida dude. You're in the area, you're in the region, but it's tough when you're not as involved in the conference, so to speak, or you haven't been as involved in the conference, and you're coming in. It's almost like you're an outsider trying to creep your way in, and sometimes it doesn't reflect as well, or doesn't go as well for those guys.
Speaking of Florida, FSU just not good enough. Like, how do you explain their season? Like, just not good enough to be a legit contender throughout the entire season, but they'll have some exciting moments. I thought they were legit, but
Charlottesville's a weird place for them. Yeah. 1995, that was the, I think, like a Thursday night game. That was the first ACC loss for Florida State when they were in the conference. They won from like 92 to 95. They won every single ACC game. And Virginia was the first time they lost a conference game. So that traditionally has always been.
Was that Tiki Barber?
Maybe Tiki Barber?
That makes sense around the time, right?
But it just it's an odd place to play for FSU. And then it's tough for Friday night games, I think, and I'm giving you all the excuses right now why FSU didn't come out to play. Facts are they should have gone out there and blown doors off Virginia. They were a more talented football team.
Much
more talented, and that shouldn't have been a competitive football game whatsoever. But Charlottesville proves to be very tricky for the Noles.
Last but not least, we already talked about Georgia Tech and Georgia and Penn State. Obviously, James Franklin poops the bed again. But my biggest disappointment from the weekend, though, USC. They lose to Illinois, and I thought USC was on the come. That's a big toe stubbing for me.
After Illinois with a bounce back, too.
Getting blown out.
You get
the
week before by Indiana, and you get yourself composed, and you do a last-second drive to win that ball game versus USC. USC is sort of – they are what they are. It's a lot of flash, but not a lot of substance right now for them, so – they'll get their 8-9 wins, but they'll lose to Notre Dame. They'll lose to Illinois. Actually, they might be an 8-win team this year. How about that? Or a 9-win team this year, I should say. And they'll lose to one other team as well. And then, you know.
Lincoln Riley? I mean, how many more years are you going to do this again, this song and dance?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
Is he still worth it? I mean, is he – I don't know their – I mean, I know they had a good recruiting class. But.
Yeah. I mean, USC, and you have – you talk about a school with a ton of NIL money. They were a couple kids last year in Georgia's recruiting class that Georgia ended up poaching away from USC. They talked about they were USC commits at one point, and USC would have Aaron Donald just at these kids' official visits just talking to these kids and talking about playing for USC. Aaron Donald played for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I was about to say, how does that make sense?
But Aaron Donald would be out in LA on campus for these visits, helping USC recruit these kids. I mean, that's the kind of attention that you would get with the USC program. So,
yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I don't know. That the bloom on the rose there is starting to get a little thin. Hey, want to get your Thanksgiving week started with some golf for a great cause? Sports Radio 92.9 The Game's third annual Brown Grass Charity Golf
Don't show
Classic.
Up with knee pain like Mike Bell did last year.
Oh, my goodness. Presented by Findlay Roofing is coming up Monday, November 24th at Eagle Watch Golf Club in Woodstock. Now is your chance to sign up. Go to 92.9thegame.com and click the events link. But do it now because foursomes are going quickly. That's the third annual Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic benefiting Pets for Vets, November 24th. All right, when we get back, let's get all the skinny on the Falcons after the huge win on Sunday. Joe Patrick, Falcons Insider, joins me next on Chris Thomas Tonight. Yes, what a difference a week makes. Now this sultry sound permutates your ears and we bask in the glory of a Falcons win, especially a win coming off of the loss that they had in Carolina. To break all that down, our intrepid Falcons reporter, Joe Patrick, in his weekly spot with me here. Make sure you follow Joe Patrick on football for the latest on the Falcons nearly every single day, wherever you get your podcast. Joe, how you feeling after this one, my friend? Can we just take a deep breath and just acknowledge that just felt good, my friend. It just felt good.
Absolutely, Chris. I mean, that song feels so much more appropriate this week. It felt wrong to play it last week, but yeah, I mean, like, this is the week where you blast that song out the car, out the car window, you roll it down, you kind of just cruise in this nice sunny weather we've got here this evening on a lovely evening, and just relax after a nice, easy, breezy Falcons win. It's kind of funny, Chris, that the team is 2-2 right now going into the bye with two wins, I think, against in the games that I think coming into the season you would have chalked up as most likely the two losses if you were to have predicted the team to be 2-2 at this point. So kind of funny how it's all turned out, but for considering everything that's happened, I think that you'll probably take it if you're a Falcons fan at this point.
What were the biggest differences you saw with the offense?
Oh, I mean, it was just a lot sharper execution, first of all. I mean, I know that is a very lame thing to say because you can just say that anytime the offense performs better, but it's true. Like, Michael Penix was much more accurate with his throws. So much boils down to that, frankly, and just how much a quarterback being on or off on a given day can really affect the whole thing. And not to say that there weren't like some, aspects of the Falcons that contributed to Michael Penix playing poorly, but I do think that obviously he had a much improved performance. I think one of those things that helped him play better though, Chris, was the fact that the offensive operation was cleaner, and it sounds like, having talked to the players in the locker room after the game, that Zach Robinson being on the field contributed to that improved offensive operation. And not just the fact they didn't take penalties or waste timeouts in that respect, but it felt like the play was getting in a lot sooner. I know they tried to kind of downplay that at the time coming out of that Carolina game, but I have to think that that was clearly, an objective for them going into this one, was to get to the line quicker so that Penix could have some more time to assess things. And I would just say, from a kind of tactical, if we are going to approach this from a tactical perspective, I think getting Drake London in the slot was really important. He spent more percentage. He had a higher percentage of slot snaps in this game on passing downs than he has any time this season. And maybe the highest percentage of slot snaps in his career. I have to go back and look, but he was in the slot 50% of the time in this game. He averaged 39% slot snaps in games last season. And interestingly enough, Chris, he was in the slot 18.6% of the time against Carolina. That is among the lowest of his career outside of his rookie year. So maybe one of the reasons why they wanted to make a change in that receiver room, to make sure that they were getting their players in the best positions on the field. And I think you can't really argue with the results after one game.
How much of a difference do you think it makes that in the two games that they couldn't run the ball, the opposition had Derrick Brown and Vita Vea?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. And I give A'shaun Robinson some credit. You know, he kind of gets under-talked about because Derrick Brown is so good there in Carolina, but he had some big stops against them too. And yeah, Vita Vea is obviously a tough opponent to try to move. And, you know, maybe the Falcons were a little, I don't know if naive is too strong a word, but in thinking that they could just kind of run the ball up the middle, kind of at him and win in some of those situations. You know, obviously they were much improved in the run game. I think that it also helped, you know, we talked about Drake London, some of the, you know, just getting players in the best positions to succeed, you know, and Drake London is his slot snaps. I thought the team was better in the run game in this game, not just because they were just force feeding the ball to Bijan, but because they were actually getting Tyler Algier involved. And I thought that we saw them kind of get in that rhythm of kind of both of them being in the game. Obviously, Algier used a little bit more toward the end of the game, but I think that that's a great opportunity to use him when you've kind of softened up that defense a little bit and he can run at those guys with the full head of speed that he's got and he can really deliver the blows we saw on that touchdown run. But I think that it's, you know, both of those guys contributing. And I thought that schematically the team was just really interesting with the way that they were mixing and matching some personnel groups to you know, get the best opportunities to run at this Washington defense. I wonder if it's something they could potentially do going forward.
Just how impressive have the two youngsters in the secondary been, Bowman and Watts?
Yeah, you know, this whole rookie class has really, you know, stood out and been the impact group that I think that we expected. But I think I think that at least we knew that they needed them to be impact players if this team was going to be successful. And I think the way that they're performing is kind of, you know, it coincides with also the Falcons defense just kind of being better than I think a lot of people thought they would be, especially this early on in the season. And those players have played a big role in it. And it's no surprise that, how do I say this? Like the only way the Falcons defense was going to be as good as they've been so far was if these two players were playing as big of a role as they have been. And it's great that we've seen both of them really contribute in the takeaway phase of the game, which was something that, you know, the team kind of always says they want to be a focus, but I don't know how you can actually, you know, do that. It's more just a matter of the skill sets and traits that these players have coming to the fore when they're out there. And I think we see the ball hawking nature of both of these players, and especially Xavier Watts. You know, this last year with Justin Simmons back there, you know, in that defensive secondary, just didn't quite have the athleticism at this point in his career. And I think that showed several times. It cropped up last season in a painful way for the Falcons. And I think that right now we're just seeing a player in Xavier Watts who just has more mobility, literally just a rangier player in that position. And I think also in Jeff Ulbrich's scheme, he's just not asking too much of these guys. He's giving them very, you know, to borrow a Raheem Morrisism, some role clarity and just some very, you know, simple instructions. And they go out there and, to quote Jeff Ulbrich, use their superpowers. And that's exactly what we're seeing out of all these guys.
Now that Caden Ellis has an equally athletic defender next to him in Divine Diablo, Joe, how special has it been to watch those two as a tandem?
Yeah, it's been interesting, Chris, because I kind of put it out there during training camp. I put a tweet out saying that I felt like Divine Diablo was going to impress people. I didn't know that he was going to be as impressive as he has been through these four games. And I say that because you could just see the size on it. I mean, he is big, he's tall, he's long for a linebacker. And you can see, and he's also well built. He's a strong guy. And I think that he's obviously built up that strength, having been a converted safety as he was when he was in college at Virginia Tech. And you can just see, you know, it was that combined with the way that Raheem Morris and some of these defensive coaches would talk about him and talk about how smart he was, talking about how he's a guy who can wear the green dot. Obviously, Caden Ellis does that. But these two have really created a great tandem, and they're both very versatile linebackers, and that allows Jeff Ulbrich to do so many different things with regards to, you know, blitzing, showing blitz and bailing out of it, But we've seen, you know, we know that Caden Ellis is a linebacker that really excels at rushing the passer. But it can be even more effective when you can, you know, challenge an offensive line by, you know, stemming Caden Ellis down, making him look like he's going to blitz, but then he backs out and then Divine Diablo comes on the blitz or vice versa. But just the fact that both those linebackers are so versatile and interchangeable in what they can do, I think it really gets the best out of both of them. And obviously, you know, kind of to the point that we've been talking about, they're obviously a key reason why the Falcons defense is, you know, like statistically one of the best defenses in football right now, which is just insane to even think about, considering we were talking about them needing to be basically league average. They've been well above that to this point.
Yeah, and to the tune of, I heard Ian Eagle and J.J. Watt say that the Falcons had the number one pass defense in the NFL entering the game. I was like, what? I was like, but then you go back. You know, even in the losses, you know, J.J. McCarthy didn't do anything. Bryce Young didn't do anything. Marcus Mariota didn't do anything. So in three out of the four games, even in a loss, the quarterbacks didn't do anything through the air. I mean, that's really what it comes down to as we're talking all things.
And Chris, even in that Tampa Bay game, you wonder if that wasn't the first game of the season, you know, if Xavier Watts is actually coming away with a couple of those picks where he was really close and they obviously dropped several more. It wasn't just him. There were other players involved as well. You wonder if that game happens again, if they wouldn't have a lot more success against that Tampa Bay offense. So it is a very good offense.
Well, to your point, I've been, you know, pounding the table on this. If he hangs on to those two balls, he'd have four picks right now through his first four games. As we're talking with Joe Patrick, Falcons insider here, 92.9 The Game. Check out Joe Patrick on Football, the podcast, for all your Falcons info. How shocked are you to see Romo kick again?
No, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I think they had to bring in competition to kind of light that fire again and keep that fire going. I think that that competition will be something that probably, you know, just sustains for quite a while. But wasn't surprised, especially, you know, like basically it was locked in on Friday once we saw that Ben Sauls, the kicker who they picked up and put on their practice squad, was not an elevation, that Parker Romo was going to be the kicker. And, you know, listen, he made his kick. I don't know if he really proved anything in that game. I mean, there were chip shot field goals that he made. And so, but it's good to get the confidence, you know, of just having made the kicks. And we'll see when he is in a more of a pressure packed situation, how he does. But I would expect him to continue to be the kicker going forward. I would say, though, Chris, you know, just even beyond the kicking aspect, the special teams is something that I think that is still in need of refinement. It just feels inconsistent, whether it's the coverage units or the return units making mistakes here and there. And I hate it for Marquise Williams because he's a special teams coach, and it feels like some of the mistakes that are being made, it's hard to really chalk them up too much to coaching. It just feels like, you know, when a player is dropping kickoffs on return units, or you've got, you know, a 23-yard punt, or, you know, missed kicks even, like, I don't, you know, there's only so much the special teams coach can do. Not to say it's been perfect on that front, but I think that, you know, again, like kind of like with Penix last week in the offense, it's part coaching, it's part execution by the players, and so they're just going to need to get that tidied up. I will say, though, you know, I would expect Troy Anderson to be coming off of PUP at some point, you know, in the middle of this season. And I think, you know, for as much as he may be a disappointment in terms of the injuries and just really kind of not fulfilling what he could have been as a player, in that respect, I do think that he could be one of the best special teams players in the NFL. He's got that incredible ability to run and tackle in space. And so I think that the units can be much improved, many of the units, when he returns.
Before I let you go, what do you know about the schedule for the next few days? Because it's a while. I mean, going from playing on a Sunday to not playing until the next Monday night football game is a long time off.
Yeah. So I believe the way that Raheem Morris was talking suggested that the players would still be around the facility, not just yesterday, but also today. And then basically now, by the time now that we're talking, they've left the facility, and now their vacation basically starts. And, you know, they went back to the facility where they were given some guidelines by their coaches, by their performance staff, of things they needed to be doing and maintaining their bodies while they were on break. You know, when to get lifts in, what they need to be doing on their lifts and their training, because they still will be asked to do that just on their own time while they're on vacation, or, you know, maybe just hanging out at home since it's so early in season, whatever they choose to do. And so they will be gone. You know, maybe we see them at their alma maters potentially, if that's something they would like to do, over the weekend, at, you know, during, for a college football weekend, and they will have the weekend off. And then I would imagine they'd be back to work probably on Wednesday, but it could be even later. We haven't gotten the media schedule yet for what it looks like. Usually on, if you're playing on a Monday, basically everything is bumped back a day, as you would think. So the normal big day on Wednesday would be on Thursday, but I would think that they'll be around middle of next week. So they get a full week off. It just, that full week hasn't really started until right now.
Appreciate it as always, Joe. We'll talk to you next week as we get set for Buffalo. Should be a very interesting matchup.
Yes, indeed. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right, that is our own Joe Patrick there. Great stuff there from Joe. When we get back, we'll wrap this puppy up with sound from QB1, RB1, and WR1. How about that? Michael Penix, Bijan Robinson, and Drake London all meeting the media. We'll let you hear what they had to say after the awesome win versus the Commanders. All that and more next to wrap up shop here on a Tuesday. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas tonight. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Been a fun Tuesday. Did a little couple of things different today. We had some fantasy football talk. We had some WNBA talk. If y'all missed what Nafisa Collier had to say to the commish, one of the most vocal rip jobs from a player to authority that I've ever heard in my life. She did an amazing job as their CBA approaches. We talked some Braves with Grant McCauley. It was just a great day with the Falcons on a bye. We talked a bunch of Falcons as well. Obviously had Joe Patrick on, took your calls on the state of the team as well. But just wanted to, and we'll do it again tomorrow. We'll talk some more college football. We'll have Caleb Johnson on to talk some Hawks, media days. Oren asked me if I thought they were a 50-win team. I do. I think the East is weak and the Hawks are on the upswing and the East is for the taking. Am I saying they're going to win it all? No, but I'm saying it should be a really, really fun season. Before we get out of here, let's hear from some of the stars of the game on Sunday, starting with Michael Penix Jr. He said on Sunday that he just felt like today would be different.
When I woke up, just blessed. You know, I just always put my faith and trust in God. You know, obviously, you know, after the performance last week, it's a lot of people that have a lot of things to say. But the only person I listen to is God. And I know that, you know, he has my back. He's with me throughout all the ups and downs. You know, so at the end of the day, you know, as long as I go out there, be myself, continue to trust in him, you know, I'll be fine.
Yeah, and a lot of players, Bijan Robinson as well, always is somebody who relies on his faith to carry you through. Listen, whatever he did on Sunday morning, do it again, QB1, because that was certainly awesome and hopefully a repeatable formula. He said he also talked about the week that was at practice leading up into the game.
Yeah, it was great. You know, the guys responded great, you know, and the way that everybody went about practice, you know, it's just like everybody was flying around, you know, and making big-time plays in practice so that it can come true and come to light in the game, and it did today. But it was really good. You know, I feel like there's just a lot of positive energy in the building. You know, obviously it's tough to have that after a loss like we did last week, but to be able to have that and the guys, you know, being ready to bounce back and come out and put on a performance like they did today, it was awesome to see.
Yeah, and it's got to be a situation where you're able to not let that derail you in terms of being a young quarterback and being put in a situation where you got humbled and you need to come back and live to fight another week and put yourself in a situation where you are becoming like, or they call him Ice Trey for a reason. He's
absolutely
got ice in his veins, and Michael Penix Jr. Needed to and did take a page out of that book for himself. He echoed that as well. He said, hey, listen, I just needed to be me out there.
Just be you, be yourself. You know, we all are here for a reason, you know, and something that DJ told me is like, you like, just be yourself, you know, don't go out there and, you know, feel like you got to be Superman and try to do everything. You know, at the end of the day, we're all here for a reason. And we just got to believe in that and just go out there and execute and we'll be all good.
And they were. And they made it known that, listen, that week against the Carolina Panthers was not something where we are going to be defined by that. We're not going to be labeled as, you know, non-contenders and non-competitive week in and week out because of one game. They were able to turn it around, flush it, and make it so that now we're looking at this team at 2-2 with the sky's the limit on their bye week. Bijan Robinson was asked about Penix, and he said, hey, as always, cool as a cucumber.
Yeah, I mean, he stayed the same. Like, you know, he stayed his mellow self. Like, he didn't get too high, didn't get too low. Like, you know, he did his routine the same way. But he just knew, like, everybody around him, you know, came together. You know, we all came together as an offense. And, you know, we all, from the O-line to the running backs to the receivers, like, we knew we had a goal that we had to set in mind for this week. But not just this week, but every time we get on the football field. And for us, like, for us to become the best we want to become, we have to be consistent. And he knew that he had to be consistent, as did all of us. And that's what he did.
And that's what they need him to continue to do. Don't get too high, don't get too low, as Bijan was saying, because as the leader of the team goes as you go, right? You got to be able to put yourself in a position as the leader to set the tone, be the example. And that's tough to do 7 games into your NFL career on a team with playoff expectations. This team put a lot on the young kid's shoulders, but he has been able to respond thus far. Bijan also said, hey, that loss against the Panthers, we fed off that and it made us better.
I feel that last week was supposed to happen how it was supposed to happen, because it put us in a new mindset. It drove us to a different way. Like, we understood that if we put that stuff on film, like, it's not good for nobody. It's not good for us as teammates, for the coaches. So, you know, our urgency was very high this week. And, you know, now as me as a leader on offense, like, I can't let us, you know, do anything less than, you know, I got to make sure that we're always, you know, urgent. We have so much urgency in practice, and, you know, we're not taking plays off. You know, we're finishing, we're doing all the little things, because when we do that kind of stuff, like, we put up results like this, and we still have so much more in the tank, in my opinion. And, you know, this is a small sample size, but for us, like, we know that we can control the game however we want to control it, but we have to do everything, you know, one day at a time, one play at a time, and we'll be all right.
Yeah, and that's how they got to approach the rest of the season, right? Especially in a game versus a team like Buffalo. Because if you start getting in your head and overthinking and making it seem like, you know, you don't know what's up or what's down at this point, you're going to put yourself in a lot of trouble, right? Because that team scores 33 points a game, and they're able to run right over you, literally and figuratively, with Cook and with Josh Allen. How about Drake London? He was talking about Penix bouncing back. He says, man, that's QB1. Not surprised.
That's who he is. He's a gamer at the end of the day. You know, we all had to have candid conversations about just what we were doing out there, and we all came together as a whole, and I think it showed today. But there's still another level.
That's something you just heard Drake and Bijan say, right? There's still another level. I don't know. When you score 34 points, it's pretty good, but I'm glad to hear that they think they have another level. Again, they went into the game 0 touchdowns between the tight end group and the wide receiver group. And with Zach Robinson on the sideline, they were able to nip that in the bud and get themselves back into a position where now the offense is humming. And are you able to take that back at home against one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NFL? Speaking of Z-Rob on the sideline, Drake London was asked about that as well.
Just we can see his face, tell him what we see in the war, and he's down there with us. So, yeah, it was good today.
And it showed it was interesting because Oren – like, we didn't know if this thing was going to take a couple of weeks with him on the sideline to get adjusted and to make sure that, you know, everybody was on the same page. But for it to be instantaneous results to the tune of 34 points at home, I mean, that's nothing short of amazing. So for that to go that well, that quickly, I mean, listen, I would put my hand up and say I didn't expect that right away. One more from Drake here. He was talking about how nice it was, exactly what we're talking about, to get all of the offensive pieces involved.
Yeah, spread the wealth. That's what it is. It's simple. Everybody get a touch. Everybody could, you know, get a piece of the pie. So it was good.
And that's going to be the key for this Falcons team in order to maintain, what's the word we keep using, everybody? Consistency, right? Consistency for this offense. Because if they go out in a week from Monday and put up 16 points, are we right back, Oren? Are we right back where we started from? That's the problem, right? That's exactly what we're looking at here as the season continues to progress. at the end of the day, as we turn the page from this one and we, you know, we really continue to focus on the bye week, I'm so proud of this team for, unfortunately, only one of the very few times since I've been here in Atlanta. Most of the time, the Falcons have been one of the more disappointing franchises in the NFL over the last five seasons, which is how long I've been here. But to have this team, pun intended, rise up and get to the point where they are now 2-2 going into the bye week, and it just feels so much different. You've heard it up and down the radio station, how much different it feels being 2-2 versus 1-3 going into the bye week. It literally makes a world of difference. So I'm not surprised that this team got here. I'm just surprised at the way that they got here. I think most of us would have pictured the two games that they lost being the two games that they won and vice versa. But at the end of the day, you're here. You're 2-2 and everything is right in front of you. And with the way that the game against Carolina looked, I don't know how many of us were really at a point where we could say that. As a matter of fact, I know not many of us were. So when it comes down to the response, when it comes down to the vibes, when it comes down to the state of the team right now, it is a completely different situation than it would have been if they were not able to pull that game out on Sunday. And, you know, Raheem and his staff and everybody, when they get back in the lab, they'll look at the things that need to get fixed. We know what they are. Special teams needs to be better. Defense could tighten up some screws in a little bit. They allow way too many rushing yards to opposing quarterbacks. We know we got to lock down the kicker situation. Is Romo the guy or not? But that's what they're doing right now at Flowery Branch. And for the next couple of weeks, it's a good thing that they have so much time to prepare for Buffalo.